Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for November 1st, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Zhaozha Li about using a synthetic peptide to inhibit the inflammatory signaling that can lead to disease. Inflammation is an important part of the immune response to injury or infection, but excessive inflammation can lead to disease. Interleukin-17 and interleukin-25 are cytokines that induce inflammation when they bind to and activate their receptors, and they're important in the progression of inflammatory diseases such as asthma and rheumatoid arthritis, and in autoimmune diseases such as psoriasis and multiple sclerosis. In a study published in this issue of Science Signaling, Zhaozha Li's group reports on a mechanism for attenuating IL-17 and IL-25 signaling by preventing the receptors from interacting with an adapter protein that's required for transducing the signal. Zhaozha Li spoke to me from the Cleveland Clinic. Welcome, Dr. Li.
Yes, hi.
IL-17 and IL-25 are important mediators of inflammation, and they're produced by T cells. How do these ligands induce inflammation?
IL-17 mainly participates in autoimmune inflammatory responses by inducing pro-inflammatory and neutrophil mobilizing cytokines and chemokines in different tissue cells. And interleukin-25 plays an important role in allergic inflammation by inducing so-called Th2-associated neutrophil mobilizing cytokine chemokines in epithelial cells and also in T cells. Interleukin-17 is the signature cytokine produced by a special subset of T cells called THL-17 cells. These THL-17 cells, discovered about 6-7 years ago, have attracted really tremendous attention from both basic and clinical immunologists due to their critical roles in host defense and autoimmune inflammatory responses. So interleukin-17 basically is a major pro-inflammatory cytokine. One important function of interleukin-17 is to coordinate local tissue inflammation. So when THL-17 cells infiltrate into the tissues, various tissue cells, including epithelial cells in the airway and the gut, fibroblasts in the joints, or even astrocytes in the central nerve system, can all respond to IL-17 stimulation and then produce pro-inflammatory cytokines and chemokines. These cytokine chemokines are small proteins that can act on inflammatory cells by attracting them to the tissue from the bloodstream and then activate them. So the inflammatory response is amplified. The specific set of cytokine chemokines induced by IL-17 in the tissue cells enable the infiltration of neutrophils, macrophages, and also T lymphocytes to the tissue. Now, in addition to the production of cytokine chemokines, interleukin-17 can also directly impact on the cellular functions of tissue cells, including mucus production by the epithelium in the airway and also cell survival proliferation of the tissue cells, which are all the integral part of an inflammatory response. So now let me also briefly talk about interleukin-25. Interleukin-25, also referred as interleukin-17E, is actually a member of the IL-17 family. The function of interleukin-25 is quite different from interleukin-17. Interleukin-25 plays a very important role in allergic inflammation. And previous studies have shown that interleukin-25 levels are induced in lung epithelial cells in response to allergens. Now, on the other hand, interleukin-25 stimulation of airway epithelial cells induced expression of cytokine chemokines that are critical for allergic inflammation. So the airway epithelium initiates allergic airway inflammation by producing IL-25 and responding to it. In addition to epithelial cells, interleukin-25 can also directly act on naive T cells to drive their differentiation to T cell subset called Th2 cells for the production of specific cytokines that are important for allergic inflammation. And lastly, the activated T cells then in turn produce more alternate 5 to amplify the allergic inflammation.
One of the molecules that's required for cells to receive the IL-17 and the IL-25 signals is ACT1, which is an adaptor protein that's recruited to the receptors upon binding the ligands. And that's the protein that you focused on in this study. How does ACT1 participate in transducing the IL-17 and the IL-25 signals?
Yeah, so the ACT1 molecule contains several unique features that enable its recruitment to both IL-17 receptor and IL-25 receptor upon ligand stimulation. And then ACT1 in turn interacts with downstream signaling components to drive the activation of transcription factors and induction of specific set of genes. So both IL-17 IL-25 receptors belong to a newly defined so-called CEPHR protein family due to a conserved sequence segment called CEPHR in their cytoplasmic domain. Now, this CEPHR domain actually shares some homology with the so-called TEAR domain in toll-like receptors, which are the very well-known pattern recognition receptors for the detection of infection. Now, just like the TEAR domain, the CEPHR domain is mainly for protein-protein interaction, mediating the homotypical interaction between proteins. So we previously cloned and identified ACT1 based on its ability to activate NF-kappa-B, and that's how it's named as NF-kappa-B activator 1. Later, it was found that ACT1 contains a CEPHR domain at its carboxyl terminus, and therefore ACT1 is also now a member of the CEPHR protein family. And we and others previously reported that ACT1 is recruited to IL-17 receptor and IL-25 receptor upon ligand stimulation through the CEPHR-CEPHR domain interaction. Now, in addition to the CEPHR domain, ACT1 also has several so-called TRAF binding sites, allowing ACT1 to interact with a family of signaling molecules called TRAFs. Through its interaction with these different TRAFs, ACT1 mediates the activation of transcription factors such as NF-kappa-B in response to IL-17 and IL-25 stimulation, leading to now the induction of gene expression. Another very important feature of ACT1 is its enzymatic activity as an E3 ubiquitin ligase through a region called UBOX located in the middle of this molecule. And this enzymatic activity is essential for both interleukin-17 and interleukin-25-mediated signaling and also inflammatory gene expression. There are still many questions to be answered for how ACT1 mediates IL-17 and IL-25 signaling. For example, we are currently working on how ACT1 mediates the specific signaling pathways in epithelial cells in response to IL-17 versus IL-25 stimulation and leading to neutrophilia and eosinophilia respectively.
In this study, you were looking for the part of ACT1 that was required for its binding to the receptor. What part of the protein is required for that activity?
So as I have mentioned earlier, ACT1 is recruited to IL-17 receptor, IL-25 receptor through this heterodimeric interaction between their CEPHR domains. So we were interested then in determining whether disruption of the CEPHR-CEPHR domain interaction might be a feasible strategy to block IL-17, IL-25 signaling. So we first decided to map the CEPHR region that are critical for this interaction by removing pieces of CEPHR domain from ACT1 and then test these ACT1 CEPHR mutants for their interaction with the receptors. And so by doing that, we found a segment in the middle part of the CEPHR domain is critical for the interaction of ACT1 with the receptors. We were then interested to know why and how this region is important for interaction. And Dr. Sarah Misra, a structural biologist here at Cleveland Clinic, helped us to carry out some computational modeling. So the modeled structure of ACT1 CEPHR domain shows a central 5-stranded sheet structure surrounded by 5 parallel helixes a structure quite similar to the telomere in the toll-like receptors I mentioned earlier. However, an additional helix, we call it C-INS, is found in the cephalodomain between the third strand and the third helix. And that region actually corresponds to the segment that we identified to be important for interaction. So we then generated peptides for this additional helix, the C-INS region, and the CC loop, which connects the C-INS to the next helix. So these peptides were then tested for their binding to the cephalodomain of the receptor. We found that the CC loop peptide, but not the C-INS peptide, actually bound to the cephalodomain of the receptor. So based on our modeling and interaction studies, we think the CC loop is a distinct interaction interface for the cephalodomain interaction. So the disruption of the specific cephalodomain interaction might be a feasible strategy to block IL-17 and IL-25 signaling.
That decoy peptide prevented ACT1 from binding to the receptor in cultured cells. Does it also prevent ACT1 binding to the receptor in an in vivo model?
Yes. So what we did was we designed a cell-permeable blocking peptide by fusing the N-terminal CC loop peptide with a cell-penetrating sequence, and that allows the peptide to get into the cells. And so by doing that in cell culture model, we found this peptide can get into the cells and block the interaction of ACT1 with the receptor and also block the IL-17, IL-25 signaling. And then we moved to in vivo system, and we found that this peptide is able to inhibit IL-17, IL-25 signaling in vivo. What we did was we used mice as a model system, and we intranasally inject IL-17, IL-25 to the mice, and that initiates this IL-17, IL-25 dependent pulmonary inflammation. And if we now add peptide, also inject intranasally to the mice, then the inflammatory response is reduced.
Do you have any indication that this sort of approach for attenuating IL-17 and IL-25 signaling might be possible in human patients?
Yeah, so in the mouse system, the peptide was delivered by intranasal injection. Now, in human patients, we might be able to deliver as well by using an inhaler, for example. However, peptides are limited in that they are metabolically unstable due to, you know, the protease cleavage of the peptide backbone. So it's not an ideal drug per se. So as a future goal, we will try to develop so-called peptide mimetics by designing analogs to define a minimum active sequence and then to identify the key residues and portions of the backbone in the peptide that are responsible for this biological effect. So we need to collaborate with chemists to develop reagents like that. Another way is by doing so-called structure-based drug discovery. And we are collaborating with structural biologists to solve the structure of the cephalodomain. And using the structure of the cephalodomain, then candidate drugs that are predicted to bind with high affinity and selectivity to the target might be designed using so-called interactive graphics. And that is our future goal.
Well, thank you, Dr. Li, for speaking with me.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Zhaozha Li, senior author of a research article published in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper by Liu and colleagues is titled, A CC Loop Decoy Peptide Blocks the Interaction Between ACT1 and IL-17RA to Attenuate IL-17 and IL-25-Induced Inflammation. A second paper in this week's issue also addresses the role of ACT1 in IL-17 signaling. In that paper, she and colleagues report that an enzyme promotes IL-17 signaling by disinhibiting the transcription factor NF-kappa-B and also attenuates IL-17 signaling by promoting the degradation of ACT1. Together, these two papers highlight the role of ACT1 in transducing inflammatory signaling and its potential as a therapeutic target in the context of inflammatory disease. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.